lots of football to talk about. Arash Badani, Stephen Brunt with you on your Friday. Argos are hosting the East Final on Sunday. Over at Tim Hortons Field in Hamilton on Sunday, it's the CPL Final on Monday night at the Old Ralph in Buffalo. It's going to be the Bills hosting the Patriots in what's going to be a scene there under the lights.
No, it's the biggest game. Like they've been some big games for the Bills the last season. But yeah, a Monday nighter with the Bills kind of wobbling and the Patriots playing really, really well. And Monday night in Orchard Park is always a scene, period, because there's like 8 extra hours of drinking involved.
Yes.
But this is going to have some juice.
I'm just trying to imagine. Look, because it's the Patriots, and I get Brady's not there anymore, but the scene in Buffalo is going to be incredible, especially because last year really wasn't until the playoff game that they were able to have some fans in that building. Mm. And there was a bit of an anticipation for it, so it's going to be a scene there. It's going to be a scene in Toronto on Sunday. They've opened up the upper deck for the East Final. The Tiger Cats are coming to town. It's a great rivalry. We should be talking mainly that. We should be talking football, Grey Cup appearance on the line. We should be talking about one of the great rivalries in not just Canadian sport, but in North American sport. But as we bring in the general manager of the Toronto Argonauts, Mike Pinball Clemens. Michael, when did you find out that your starting quarterback was at the Raptor game last night?
You say it instead of, you can actually make the conscious choice. We can talk about the game.
We'll get to it.
Okay.
Hey, Michael.
How are you, Stephen?
Good to hear your voice.
All right. Excellent. I did hear that he was going to be going to the game, ahead of time. And it was, certainly, you know, my thought that, okay, he's been approved to go to the game. They've done the protocol things. I've had one or two things that that I've done that I've asked the league on the protocols. And all of those things we thought were inherent in his visit.
So then what happened?
Turns out that, the reality is the young man, McLeod Bethel Thompson is just a extraordinary young man. When you speak to him, when you interview him, I know both of you have had a chance to speak to him, and he simply obliged what the team asked him to do, and so finds himself kind of stuck in the middle, right? This is an error on my part, right? This is something a situation that we should not have put him in.
What was it, Mike? What was it like during the day today? During that time when it looked like you might not have your quarterback for the Eastern Final?
Well, I mean, he could have, you know, and certainly don't want to wish anything or say anything, but he could have thrown his shoulder out today. Right. So the very first thing that goes in your mind and what we do is, one, check out the situation, get detailed on the situation itself and be prepared to adapt. Right. In our game, the changes and especially in this culture, in this atmosphere have been so numerous and so rapid that you're constantly trying to respond to the next injury, the next challenge, and that's the mode that you switch into when something like that happens is you're collecting information first of all and trying to understand the entirety of the situation as much as you possibly can and then it is the what if scenarios.
So how is it communicated with the league? Michael Pinball Clemens joins us, the Argos GM. How did the day unfold, Michael, with the league and whether or not McLeod Bethel Thompson was going to be able to play or not?
Well, the league has a process, and I can't speak for them. But in terms of them, they were very prudent. I can't say that I know all of the situations because our team president was contacted at another point, and also one of our other team members were contacted, and some of the initial conversations happened at that level, and so then proceeded on, and then we became aware this morning that the league was proceeding ahead in looking at potential penalties for compromising our protocol rules, and so I can't say, Harash, that I know all the conversations that happened in between.
Mm-hmm. Right,
but yes, it just sort of progressed during the day.
So Mike, when did you find out that the league had chosen to alter its protocol rules in a way that we might allow Mac to play on Sunday?
I guess the big thing here is that I don't think these rules were put in place to be predatory. They were put in place to help keep people safe, and I think they got together and decided, and for me it was midday-ish. I don't know if it was just before midday, just after midday. I can't tell you the exact timing, but somewhere around midday that there was a possibility, right, that they felt like they could do the necessary things, and that if he passed the test that he needed to, that they feel safe that he would be safe enough not only to play himself but to play against opponents.
Michael Pinball Clemens, the Argos GM, joins us. We're going to talk about the game in just a moment, Michael, but I saw a report that you addressed the team today, either after practice, before practice. What was kind of your message to the guys leading into their workout today and leading into this weekend?
Actually, I did not address them today.
Okay.
I would usually Coach Dinwiddie usually would give me some time a day or two before the game, and often it's the day before.
Let's try this again. Take two, Michael.
Yes.
Michael, yes. You're going to get a chance to talk to your team before the East Final against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. What's your message going up against those damn tabbies?
Thank you, guys. I mean, I think you can appreciate, you know, the day, and you preface by saying that, and I probably will adapt it a little bit. You know, I kind of like to flow, but I also generally during the week try to take a few notes, and you know the basics of what we've been talking about the last several weeks is don't miss the moment, right, and being present, and with all of the things that went on today, our conversation really is still about the moment itself, right, that opportunity to play in the Eastern Final and host that, you know, after a couple of difficult years, not just on the field, but in fact off the field and not playing. And so we're proud of this group and proud of what they've done. And we really want them to play their best game, just as Hamilton, I believe, played their best game, certainly one of their best games last week. This is the contest that none of us would say neither of us would probably say that we want, but I mean, this is your arch rival. This is where it's supposed to be, is the Eastern Final. It's after a year that you didn't play for the first time in 101 years. And of course, you know, the rivalry is there. One team is trying to come back and after going to the Grey Cup and coming second there. They want to do it on their home turf, and the other team wants to, you know, show people that hey, listen, they can contend, and so it's a great storyline, and so with that, you know, hopefully we can turn the attention directly to what is the next 60 minutes of football and find a way to still be living on the other side of it.
Well, and that's okay. We will now let you off the hook, and we'll talk about that for a sec, okay? Before we let you go here, Michael, like, and among again, although you know, in terms of others, like, it looks like you got a bunch of tickets sold for this game, right? Like that seems to be, you know, like, it's been a tough year, obviously, getting people in the park, and it's, you know, you're coming back to live events and all of that stuff, but it's been a tough year in terms of the Argonauts. What are you anticipating in terms of a crowd on Sunday?
You know, I think our numbers have been respectable all year long, coming off and coming into the pandemic, especially where we are in this building process. And I think the team itself walked alongside of has taken a strong walk alongside of the fans, and the fans have come to appreciate. Now, in this game, you hope that, hey, listen, we can you know, all pull together in this big game against the big opponent. All the things are said, and you know, quite honestly, we got the favorable from an audience standpoint, playing the guys right down the road, and so with that, there'll be over 20,000 people in the building, and I think I don't think we could have expected that at the beginning of this year, and we want to celebrate all the people who are supporting us and who are coming down to watch this game. And I'm just really proud of this group. Women and men, very proudly, we say today, with several young ladies having key roles in our organization and helping us to get to this point as well.
You know the voice. It's Mike Pinball Clemens, the Argos GM. Two good defenses on Sunday, Michael. The Argos win, finish the sentence. The Argos win and go to the Grey Cup if... ...
Mm-hmm. If my prayers are heard, so listen. And I was only tongue in cheek when I said you could go to the other subject, right? We need to speak to these things. They are important, and it's important to know that, you know, we're not putting the public itself at risk, right? Even what was done at the game wasn't a public risk. It was an offense of what is our T1 protocols, and so I'm so full of so much right now. There's a real joy from you know, what has happened and how the guys have come together in this whole situation, and today has been a little bit of a crazy day. And you know, with all of that said, right, you know, it adds a little bit more to the game itself, the reality I've forgotten your question, and I can't wait to
see. You know what? How do you win?
Here's what I'm going to say, Peter. Take a deep breath. You're going to have 20,000 people in the stadium. You're playing the Ticats, an Eastern final. Mm-hmm. You're going to have your quarterback probably, almost certainly now. You don't have to worry about that now. It's probably been a god-awful day for you. Big, deep breath, and, you know, smile, the spinball smile, and, you know, it's going to be, like even people, you know, the only, as you know, my Hamilton people hate everyone who wears double blue except you, right? You're the only guy that they have no ill feelings for who's ever been a Toronto Argonaut. So it's the ancient rivalry returns.
I do have a love and appreciation for them, as you know, too. So it's definitely mutual in that regard. But we play as hard as we can against each other, but there's definitely a mutual respect there.
Well, give Dinwiddie some hell for both of us, Michael, and we'll see you Sunday at BMO.
Thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate it, okay?
See you, Mike.
All right, there's Mike Pinball Clemens on a wild day.
I just, you know, it's I don't envy anybody this one, and you know, we'll probably never know exactly where the telephone line broke.
It went up to the president's office, he said, my boss. Yeah, so my Bill boss. Manning, who also runs Toronto FC, I mean, the league conversations went up there.
Yeah, so I feel for Mike. That's would have been a, you know, that'd be a brutal phone call to get.
He also took the bullet.
Yeah, he just
for
did.
For others in the organization.
Yeah.
Which is a very pinball thing to do.
Yeah, he just said essentially the buck stops with me, which maybe is true in this case, but my guess is it's not.
Mike Pinball Clemens joining us. So the Tiger Cats are coming to Toronto. Over in Hamilton, there's another football game happening, the Canadian Premier League final. Of course, what are we, Steve? 7 weeks away from that huge World Cup qualifier in that very same stadium.
Yes,
when,
sir.
The United States come in to face Alphonso Davies, Jonathan David and company. So a lot of soccer going on down there in Hamilton. It is the two-time champions, Forge FC against Pacific FC. This is wild to me. Championship soccer in December and a World Cup qualifier outdoors in January.
Yes, sir.
And I know you've talked about this over the last couple of weeks. What's your sense on the competitive advantage against the States?
I don't know that none of these guys are used to playing. Like, look, I qualify that. You know, if you play soccer in Scotland or in Germany, or there's lots of places where it is played in cold weather in the winter. It is a winter game in most of the world, and it's played. I went to a game. I watched a game in Hamburg once. I'm not sure I've ever been colder than watching a game there in the German winter. It was cold and damp and horrible. But in general, no, like nobody's used to playing soccer in the conditions they played in Edmonton. Canadian guys aren't either. It's not, you know, we don't play soccer in the snow. So I'm not sure. I think the Edmonton game against Mexico, I've said it before, did people listen to the show know that, but I think Canada would have won that on a dry pitch, on a neutral site, on a warm day. Mm. I think they were the better side. And they were very close to being the better side at the Azteca in the first round with Mexico. So I'm sure it didn't hurt, but we're actually the side we have now is creative and offensive and skilled. They play the ball in the ground. They do all kinds of cool stuff, which it's harder to do on a frozen artificial turf. It's not like we were parking the bus and, you know, hoping for a 0-0 draw. So I'm not sure it's a massive advantage. Maybe psychologically they're coming to our turf. And it's like us going to your favorite town, San Pedro Sula.
Yeah.
But in terms of the actual football, I don't think it's a big advantage.
Let's bring in Christian Jack, the soccer analyst for One Soccer and VP of Media and Content for the CPL. Christian, thanks for coming in, pal. The sense I got was this was John Herdman's decision to play that game on January 30th at Tim Hortons Field. Are you getting that same sense too?
Yeah, good evening, gents. Pleasure to be with you guys. It was certainly something Canada Soccer wanted in terms of the location of this area to play that game, no doubt about it. The talk for many weeks was Vancouver, and in the end, you know, they had to do what was best for this organization and for this group of players. You know, with the game being sandwiched between Honduras and El Salvador, they had to make sure that, you know, they could, you know, maximize the amount of time on the ground and, the you know, whether that's spend another hour or two on a plane, and help players get back to need to go where they go, you know, to the next place. So, yeah, this was obviously something they wanted to do. And I think BMO was the preference, and then they couldn't work that out eventually. Just listening to you guys, I get the same feeling amongst everybody else. You know, I think if they got the chance to play it in Stephen Brunt's back garden, they probably would at this point.
that's
basically what it is.
Yeah, it's close enough. Yeah, it's close to home. I'm thrilled they're playing in Hamilton. Wait, KJ, I do want to talk about the Mighty Forge FC as well. We'll talk Hamilton in a second. But do you know why why it turned into? Because I got the sense that, you know, BMO was the preference. It's obviously you can sell more tickets there. The national team, you know, has already kind of made that fortress BMO in this qualifying round. Why did that not work out, and why did they wind up at Tim Hortons Field?
There's lots of layers to it, actually, Steve. And in the end, you know, it's he said, she said kind of thing, right, to get the actual truth on these matters sometimes. But in the end, they just couldn't get the ball over the line, so to speak, in terms of some paperwork and then the pitch and getting all the approval and what they needed to get it through. So, look, it's a risk, right, playing the game in January anywhere. I would say that playing the game on Hamilton's pitch is less risky than it would be playing it at BMO. Mm-hmm. You know, for that game to go underway. You know, once you play a game like you did at Edmonton on the surface that they did, I think after that, the bar is set quite low in terms of standard of pitch. So I think that certainly helped as well. So at that point, you know, I think it's just great for me that this national program is being able to see being seen in different places. And I know, and trust me, I know your listeners know, it isn't far from Hamilton to Toronto. You're going to get a lot of very similar people. But Stephen, as you know, and you're quite rightly proud of it, you know, Hamilton's got a wonderful sports history, and I'm just really thrilled that that stadium, and you know, linked with our league at the Canadian Premier League, we'll get to host a game like that as well.
Well, let's talk about, because we've got a few minutes here, KJ. I do want to talk about the Canadian Premier League coming up to the championships match, and you know, the one consistent. Well, look, number one, you guys played during the pandemic, the Island Games, which I think is still one of the great stories in Canadian sport, mm-hmm. that you guys managed to pull that off in the middle of a pandemic with no fans in Prince Edward Island. So tip of the cap all around, but. You know, the Forge FC is a great story, right? Like the chance to win for a third time, also the success in the CONCACAF competition. They played all over Central America during the pandemic, and they've done a hell of a job of finding, like, you know, a Canadian Premier League player. And again, I've been very impressed with the quality of play, the entertainment value of the play right from the get go. But the ability to find those guys, like, who gets the credit for this?
Well, obviously, it starts right at the top with the Smyniotis brothers, right? Yeah. I mean, Bobby Smyniotis is the coach, and Costa obviously runs the program, and they come from Sigma FC. And these, you know, these boys have been in Canadian football, Canadian soccer circles for decades. They know talent. They know the game well. And a lot of those players that they had, you know, again, just to link it to your Canadian soccer stories off the top, they had them at Sigma, right? You know, you had Kyle Larin, you had Richie Larea. These guys were coached under Bobby Smyniotis and are now performing at a higher level. So Bobby's done a tremendous job. And, you know, it is really an underrated sports story in this country this year of what that team has done. Bear in mind, they're only 3 years old. 3 years old, and they've accomplished some things against some teams that are over 100 years old. You know, going down, as you mentioned it, they've been to El Salvador, they've been to Honduras, they've been to Panama. They just, you know, they just came back from Honduras against Motegua in a CONCACAF League game. You know, and they went toe to toe for them and got knocked out, you know, on away goals. You know, they're going to be in the Champions League draw next in 2 weeks' time to play in the CONCACAF Champions League next year in February. They could be playing a major team in MLS, or they could be playing one of the Liga MX teams. They could be going to the Estadio Azteca. That's how big it is. And they haven't just done that by being one of the best eight teams in the Canadian League. They've done it by truly setting an identity, a winning mentality. And every time you watch them, whether you've watched them for the first time, whether you don't know the game well, or whether you've watched every game, you are entertained. This is an entertaining team, much like Canadian men's national team. They keep the ball on the ground, as you alluded to earlier. They've got an identity. They attack. They're a fun team to watch. And you know, they're a difficult team to play against because they're on the fly, like great teams in any sport. They can switch their tactics on the fly. They're an intelligent, supremely IQ level team. And I think it's a fitting place to host our final on Sunday. I really do. Tim Hortons Field will be buzzing. You know, anybody who's on the fence or can get there to get down there, go down there. Go down and watch this. You can go to cplfinal.ca, get your tickets. It's going to be a truly magnificent match, and we could get to see Forge maybe lift a third trophy here in a North Star Shield. And a three-peat is hard in any sport, right, guys? Three-peat is tough.
And I will vote for the atmosphere. I'm going to be out of the country, sadly, but I would otherwise be there. The atmosphere is fantastic. Like they do have a great supporter base in Hamilton. It's been a blast, again, since day one. And the entertainment value. Lots of soccer fans out there now. You know, people are, if they weren't before, they're coming around. And this is, you know, this is local. And you know, if you want to go out and sing and wear the colors and all that stuff, and the players are, you know, very accessible. They're going to be right there. You probably see them in the bar after the game, in my experience.
You won't be seeing them at the Raptors game. I think we've learned that today. That's something you want to avoid. As KJ mentioned, tickets available, cplfinal.ca. It is the Canadian Premier League soccer final at Tim Hortons Field. It is Sunday. It is 4:30. It's Forge FC from Hamilton against Pacific FC from Langford, BC. Christian Jack, thanks for joining us, bud.
Yeah, always a pleasure, guys. Big fans of yours. And if you can't get down there, remember you can watch it on One Soccer with us as well. Thanks again.
All right.
There's, see you, KJ.
There's Christian Jack, who also does some work for the CPL. I need to get to Halifax.
Yes.
to a Halifax Wanderers game.
Yeah, so I'm sure it's very cool.
Stephen Hart is the coach, the former national team coach. Apparently, they put on a show there. So that is
this league is a great story. Yeah. Because again, they played through the pandemic, and they keep finding these. It's a real good training ground for Canadian players, and you know the future of the Canadian men's national team. But they find these international guys, and I'm not sure how you find them, and I'm not sure I have no idea how much these guys get paid, but
not a lot.
But the caliber,
yeah,
of the player, the skill set is really impressive. It's loads of fun, and it's hyper local, right? If you're in Halifax or Victoria or Winnipeg or Calgary or Hamilton, you can cheer for wear your own colors. Yes. Very cool.
So their championship game goes 4:30. What a weekend of football. The soccer, the Canadian Football League, and then Monday night in Buffalo, under the lights, it's the Patriots and the Bills. Probably the biggest regular season football game the Bills have played.
Well, since they played Kansas City earlier this year, it looked like an unstoppable force, you mean?
I think this is bigger. It's December. Different. It's under the lights. It's really, in a lot of ways, for the division.
Yeah, well, they got to play two, right? But yes, I think people are a little queasier in Buffalo than they were after that Kansas City game. I think they were counting their AFC championship at that point.
Steve Levy's going to call that game for ESPN on Monday Night Football. He's going to join us right after this. Like, there are big games, there are big regular season games, and there are rivalry games, and then there are games you kind of have a lot of hype going into those games, and it just feels Monday night in Buffalo is going to be one of those games. Arash Madani, Stephen Brunt with you until 7 o'clock. It's the Fan Drive Time. It's amazing because at the start of the season, if we had said Bills Patriots in December, it would have felt like a walkover. Josh Allen and Buffalo coming in, and who knows what Mac Jones is going to be. And even at the start of training camp, seemed like Cam Newton was going to be the starting quarterback over there in New England. And man, Cam's over there in Carolina. Mac Jones feels like the runaway for rookie of the year. And suddenly, all of a sudden, it feels like Monday night's game in Orchard Park may be for the division. Steve Levy's going to call it. Steve's called a lot of big games. He's called a lot of rivalry games, called a lot of big college games. Steve, Bills Mafia getting 7 or 8 hours to get loose in the parking lot before this game.
Yes.
What kind of scene are you expecting come kickoff on Monday night?
So listen, I wanted to make sure I didn't miss it. So I'm already in Buffalo. I got the town early today, and it's my understanding they've already opened up the parking lot.
Yes.
Okay.
So, the fans will be well-oiled, that's for sure. And by the way, don't count out Patriots fans. A lot of New England will try and travel to this game as well. So I imagine tickets on the secondary market, this will be a tough one to get. But we are ecstatic, and sometimes these games just fall into your lap. And, you know, next season, Monday Night Football will have flex scheduling like NBC does late in the season, but we don't have it this season. And so, you know, we got to get lucky once in a while. They don't always turn out this way, but we got a really good one on Monday night.
This is a beaut. Have you ever been, there's not that been a ton of Monday night games in Buffalo in recent history, but have you ever been done Orchard Park on a Monday night? I'm trying to, like, it is, like, obviously, yes, extra hours of drinking, but it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of a Mad Max element to it, right? Like, it's kind of, you know, what the world will look like after, you know, civilization kind of crumbles completely. It's like walking through that parking lot will be, I don't care, yeah, when you get there, it's going to be a scene, man.
I think this is the second time since 2008 that Monday Night Football has been in Orchard Park. And I don't remember, you know, Al and Chris going there all that often for Sunday Night Football either, you know. So,
and it took T.O. Steve, it took T.O. Yeah. going to Buffalo to get
Get
him on Monday night there in 09 or 10 or whenever it was.
Well, enjoy and be careful is, I guess, what we're saying.
Yep. Will do. No, I'm looking forward. Listen, guys, I'm going to be in the booth. I'm not going to be in the parking lot breaking tables. Okay? I'll be protected in between Greasy and Riddick. I should be okay. I got a big jacket. I'll be good. Don't worry about me.
Steve Levy's here. He's got the call Monday night. What do you think of the game? I mean, suddenly New England is like it. They're the Patriots again without Brady and Gronk and the supporting cast.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's, you know, you look around rebuilds in the NFL, right? And, you know, some programs, you know, it's 3 to 5 years on an NFL rebuild, right? I mean, a real rebuild, a real tear down and then rebuild. And, you know, some programs, you know, well, look at the Lions, for example, you know, some teams, you know, Jets or whatever, these NFL teams are trying for 10 or 15 years to get it right. And mm-hmm. So when the Patriots have a down year, they have one down year. You know, their rebuild lasts 1 year. And, you know, anybody who thought, you know, this was getting away from Bill Belichick obviously thought wrong. He's right back in the mix. And you guys are talking about for the division lead. And, you know, they're in play for the conference, too, I think. And nobody's hotter in the NFL than the Patriots, having ripped off 6 in a row. And so that's what makes this such a fascinating game on Monday night.
I think you were very generous to the Detroit Lions, saying it's been 10 or 15 years. That's a 10. That's like, I think they've been doing that since Bobby Lane, haven't they? Isn't that like
10
a
generations?
Yeah, isn't like it? Maybe a little longer than that. But I guess should I wonder, you know, but the Patriots, like they did spend, you know, they went out and spent money in the offseason. They, you know, they were aggressive in the free agent market. And I kind of wonder, you know, the Mac Jones part was obviously, you know, and maybe the Cam Newton part, as Arash alluded to, that's where we're talking about originally. But, you know, that part was unpredictable. But, you know, should we have seen this coming, especially with the defense, you know, given that some of the talent they added in the offseason?
So it's sort of twofold. First of all, a lot of teams spend money on free agents and it doesn't work out.
True.
You know, you get a guy like Judon and you sign him the top dollar and he doesn't perform. And I need a year to, you know, integrate into the system, and it's a different adjustment for me and my family and all those kinds of things. And all those might be true, but how many, you know, big time free agents in all the sports do you see? They get a big payday and that first year is well below what they did in their prior career to earn that amazing payday. So I think it's twofold, right? You gotta go out and be able to spend it. You gotta have the cap management, and then get the right guys who are gonna perform for those dollars. And the other piece is, in fairness to the Patriots, no team was hurt more by the COVID opt-outs than New England, especially on their defensive end. Dante Hightower, probably chief among them on that defense.
Yeah,
so
that's a great point.
So they got pieces back. You know, they got pieces back two ways, and then yeah, you have a rookie quarterback. You just couldn't anticipate this kind of quick turnaround. At least I don't think so. They still don't really have the star at the wide receiver, a star running back. You know, they got a couple of really good tight ends, I think. But you always talk about the skill position players, and Brady never really had those guys. And they still kind of don't, and yet they're winning the way they are, and kudos to Belichick.
I was just going to say, Steve, I think they won a couple of Super Bowls without a star wide receiver and a star running back.
Yeah,
right?
It's amazing, right? It's amazing how Tom and Bill did it together, and now, you know, Bill's definitely trying to say, hey, Tom, I can do this again without you, too, just like Tom showed last year that he could win without Bill. And I still think that's a fascinating storyline there.
Steve Levy joins us. He's going to be on the call for Monday night, the Bills and the Patriots. Steve, I don't know what to make of this season. Coming off, you know, the whole COVID thing, and then early in the season, it felt like September, October, just when you had a feel of who the quality teams in the league were. They've fallen off. I think Buffalo is one of them. You thought Kansas City, what's wrong over there in KC? And now it seems like Mahomes and company have sorted things out. Where do you see, now that the calendar's flipped to December, where do you see the Bills right about now? Because, you know, I don't know what to make of them, to be quite honest.
I think you left out the Rams too, right?
Sure.
I mean, I think about them. I mean, who is more all in than the Los Angeles Rams? You want to talk about spending? They don't have a first round draft pick, I don't know, for 3 or 4 more years. Like, they are all in, and they've lost, I think it's 4 in a row now. And
since they traded for Von Miller, nothing's happened.
Right, getting shredded, right? I mean, they're not just losing, they're losing badly. And so, you know, we were out there for the 49ers game, where San Francisco just ran the ball down their throat. So, listen, we're all prisoners to what we remember is the most recent, right? Because we're getting older and our memories can fail us from time to time. But it's hard to remember a more unpredictable season than what is going on. These great teams that we've just mentioned all have these losing streaks, and eventually they figure it out. We'll see if the Rams figure it out, and we'll see if Buffalo figures it out. Yes, it's one of the great mysteries. They have not won The Bills have not won consecutive games in like 7 weeks. I mean, that's preposterous based on the fact, you know, we thought they might be a one loss or two loss team and the clear team, the clear favorite in the AFC with the Chiefs. And that's simply not the case. So I think we're going to learn. We're going to learn a lesson come Monday night about Buffalo, more so than New England, I think.
It's Steve, I have no idea. I can't explain the Jacksonville game with the Bills, the 9-6 game, but the other two losses that came after that, they couldn't stop the run and they couldn't run the ball. It's all Josh Allen, and there's had some accuracy issues and didn't play very well in bad weather, but it looks like you can run on them, and it looks like they don't have enough of a running game. They don't have enough of a running game to play this time of year. There's more to it than that. Yeah.
Yep. I think the run game is definitely a concern. You keep waiting for someone to get going. Zach Moss has sort of been in and out of the lineup. Talk about a healthy scratch, and he's one of the guys they were counting on alongside Singletary. I think they want to throw the ball with Josh Allen. Brian Daboll is one of my favorite offensive coordinators in the league. A little surprised he didn't get a head coaching gig after last season, but he's up against it now and has to be a little more creative in how they do this, and especially with the weather. Could be messy in Buffalo on Monday night. Could be rain, could be some snow this time of year. And nobody knows this better than the Bills. And the Patriots are aware of this, too. You got to be able to run the football. And if you look at New England's this six-game winning streak, they're running the football more than just about anybody else in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been one of the keys to their winning streak, and that'll be something for Monday night. Can Buffalo run the ball even a little bit? I think they have to be successful.
Steve, you've done a lot of college football over the years. What's the craziest college football scene you encountered that comes to mind? Because I think Monday may match it.
I did a lot of Clemson, and that was Clemson at the height of Clemson. We were sort of dabbled out a little bit, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
It was just, we were there all the time. And why were we there? Because they were so good. So I've seen some great scenes. I did get to LSU on a Saturday night, which was spectacular. I did some Oklahoma State stuff was great. But the best tailgate, the best parking lot, I haven't been there in a long time, but I heard it's the same as Ole Miss. You get a chance to walk through that, the Grove, as they call it. That is spectacular scenery, as I understand it.
You really got to check that out. Good luck. Good luck Monday.
Yes.
It's going to be a scene. Have fun.
Yeah, we're going to stay out of the way, fellas. That's what we're going to do. They're going to hear us. I'm going to try to give the score once in a while, maybe get the break on time, those kind of things. But this game should take care of itself.
All right, Steve Levy on the call. Appreciate you making time, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, thanks for having me on, guys.
No, it'll be a blast. I'm thinking, Oxford, Mississippi, where Ole Miss is, it's kind of the stately southern college town, Orchard Park isn't.
Yes. Yeah, it might be the actual polar opposite.
Yeah, so, but, it'll be a blast. I've covered so many games in that stadium over the years, big games, and the folks there are what they are. Like, I've sat in the stands, too. I'm not sure, that's one where you would really have to kind of measure sitting out in the rain to watch that game and then trying to get out of there alive, versus sitting at home and watching in the comfort and listening to Steve and his crew. I think, maybe I'm getting old. I think I'd stay home.
I went to a Bills Patriots game with Brady and Gronk and all those guys, 5-6 years ago, 1:00 October afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I was wearing a purple Adrian Peterson t-shirt. Like I was Switzerland that day.
Yeah, there's no Switzerland.
There's no Switzerland in Buffalo. You are with us or you are the enemy of the people.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not kind of fun rivalry like
at all.
No, it's not. No, it's like people say, like, the Argo Ticat thing on the weekend. Like that's, yeah, there's people will say stuff and everything, but you're probably not going to get hurt. You could get hurt.
I want to talk about Canada's Athlete of the Year.
Yes.
But just one last thing, because the Josh Allen thing is perplexing to me. Josh Allen has not looked like the Josh Allen we saw for much of last year and for much of the first 2 months of the season, and it's hard to figure out why.
Well, I think they're asking him to do a ton right now, right? Like I think he's he's obviously a huge physical talent. But I think teams have figured this out a little bit, which happens to everybody. And, their inability to run the ball with running backs, because Josh Allen is effectively their running game now too.
Yep.
So you're asking him to do a ton, And again, what I've seen is kind of a lack of precision in the last few games, but you know, it's, they're asking him to thread the needle and be the offense essentially. And they do have a very good receiving core. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got guys to throw the ball to. That's unquestionably. But I think in that league, you got to be able to run, especially after running bad weather. And, you know, they're down to, you know, Matt Breida, right? Is there kind of number one option right now, right? They haven't got that. And I don't think you can go the route without that right now, especially when you can't, they also can't stop the run.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bad combination. But I still think Josh Allen's really good.
I agree.
I just think they're asking him to do things right now that maybe he can't do.
Monday night, Patriots Bills, and we'll talk a lot about that game on Monday. One of the great privileges of this job occurs next week, where a number of us, media outlets around the country, we gather. Well, I guess we'll do it virtually this year. To award Canada's Athlete of the Year. And especially in an Olympic year, there are so many terrific names. And then there are some out-of-nowhere names. Leila Fernandez gets to the U.S. Open Final. Nobody saw that coming. Kyle Larin, through this World Cup qualifying run, has just been tremendous. Old Faithful, Connor McDavid, is there. And then come the Olympians, Penny Oleksiak and Maggie McNeil and Steph Labbé and Andre DeGrasse. To me, coming into this conversation, we're going to have it on Wednesday. That's when the Athlete of the Year will be determined for 2021. To me, it's Damian Warner. He is literally the world's greatest athlete, as, you know, gold medalist in the decathlon. And he broke the 9,000 point mark. I think he's only like the third or fourth guy to ever do it. And to me, that's amazing. Steve, you and I have been in this conversation a lot. And I think one of the things I quite enjoy about the morning and the whole discussion is, rare is it that you say, well, I think Warner should win it over DeGrasse or Labbé, and you almost kind of diminish what the other person has done. It's more about showcasing what the argument you're making.
Yeah,
for
and it's like, well,
making.
It's a debate, right? And so that is kind of the way you have to do it. Like I'm not going to be there this year because I'm going to be off the grid next week. But I've announced here and to Damian, who runs this show, that not that they will count my vote because I won't be there. You have to be part of it, but that I would also vote for Damian Warner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big decathlon guy, and I was thrilled that, you know, after watching, you know, Dave Steem and Michael Smith and some very great Canadian decathletes over the years, that Damian Warner did what he did, and they said 9,000 plus points and a gold medal at the Olympics stands alone for me. I think it's interesting. The Star did a grid, right? They had everybody face off. They did a reader poll with all of the candidates, including Vladdy Guerrero Jr., of course, who is eligible. And in theirs, I think it's now down to Andre DeGrasse and Damian Warner. And I think that's, to me, like, again, it's an individual accomplishment. So team athletes, it's tricky to pull a team athlete out and say it's them. That Canadian women's national team at the Olympics was a great story, but to pull Steph Labbé out on her own, it's tough, right? It's always going to be hard for a team athlete. You know, Connor McDavid is the best hockey player in the world.
Yeah.
You have to win it.
And I think Labbé is only brought up because it went to a shootout in the gold medal.
That's right. And she was great. And she's a huge reason why they won.
Yeah.
But sprinting is, you know, one of the universals. It's one of the universals. It is every country in the world, every culture in the world has their fastest people. It's the standard measure. It's the most basic of all sports, and there's no deeper field than in sprinting. And, you know, Andre DeGrasse, you can still make an argument that he's the fastest man in the world.
Here's the question. DeGrasse ends up in lane 8 or 9, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
If he's in the middle lane in the 100, maybe that bronze is a gold.
Yes.
And if it's a gold in the 1 and the 2.
Yeah, then it's going to be pretty tough. You know, that would be arguably the greatest athletic achievement in Canadian history.
Yes.
Right? So that's what I would say. But
if it's a gold in the 100 and a bronze in the 2 and a bronze in the 4x1, maybe.
Then we're into an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you won the 1 and the 2, you're in Usain Bolt territory. You're in a different league. But what he did is astounding, and he would be a worthy winner. And the other year he would look there. The beauty of this is, you can make a case. There are people. I think there are 10 people on this list that are more accomplished than people who have won this award at times in the past.
Agreed.
Which says something about the evolution of sport in this country. I'm not dissing people who won it because mm-hmm. they were worthy winners when they won. But this tells you something about how this debate has evolved in the depth of field within our own country. It's an astounding list. You know, like I couldn't have imagined a list like this 15 years ago.
Hockey, soccer, professional hockey, professional soccer for the national team with Kyle Larin, swimming, women's hockey, swimming with Maggie McNeil, women's tennis with Layla Fernandez, women's soccer with Steph Labbé, sprinter Andre DeGrasse, decathlete Damian Warner. And that's just the list of...
Yeah, and that list does not include Alphonso Davies, who co-won last year, who is still one of the best dozen soccer players in the global game. It doesn't mm-hmm. include Jonathan David, who's having a sensational year. Like there's...
Penny Oleksiak is not listed here. I mean, there's so many more that could... Look, in a previous year... And their names may not even come up, but Denis Shapovalov got to the Wimbledon semifinal. Felix Auger-Aliassime got to the U.S. Open semifinal. That could be the conversation. They're forgotten about because Layla got to the finals.
That's right.
In New York.
No, that's right.
And so it's amazing what's coming. This is the golden age of Canadian basketball. There is not one NBA player
mm-hmm.
on that list that we're looking at right now. In any other year, in any other generation, I shouldn't say any other year, it'd be a different scene. What's going to be great in this year and in the years to come is the quality of athlete in which we will get to select from.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, to me, is what's standing out about the 2021 and beyond athlete of the year conversation.
Well, you know, pretty much everybody on that list is going to be around. For a while too, Arash. You know, if you look at it, there are careers that are just beginning there. There are people that just barely into the prime of their careers. You're going to see another Olympics from Damian Warner. You'll see another Olympics from Andre DeGrasse. That's even from this list. You know, Layla Fernandez. You know, sky's the limit, right? This is not these aren't endpoints. These are beginnings. And again, you could come up with another 10 names and add them to this list, and then. This is not a blip. This is a trend.
Yeah, they're here and they're here to stay, and that's what's amazing. You're a decathlon guy.
Mm-hmm.
Decathlon's not a sexy thing. We only really hear about it every 4 years. Can you put into context? And it's hard to. I mean, look, among the events, you're running the 1500 and doing the javelin and the pole vault. It's just nuts what you're asked to do over the course of two days.
Well, you know, speed and stamina, obviously. But the part of it that always astounded me watching it, and I was the guy there on Sunday morning, you know, for the second day, it's 8 o'clock when there's nobody in the stadium watching, you know, Mike Smith or and looking at my tables that were on paper in those days.
Yeah.
It's the technical stuff. Like it's one thing to be fast or one thing to be able to run distance run or one thing to be strong. But the technical, an event as technically challenging as pole vault or high jump, you know, those involve a whole different set of fine motor skills.
And pole vault is one of Warner's strengths.
Yeah, it is. No, he's look, again, I'm biased. I admit my bias in terms of the event, but the moment he won that medal, my vote was in.
Yeah, mine too. Mine too. Canada's athlete of the year for 2021 will be decided on Wednesday. We will be discussing that for the early part of next week. You're off.
Yes, sir. Yes, I am. The part's unknown. And then we'll see how it is coming back. Because, you know, the rules are changing. I don't know if you've noticed this, but it's a little unclear what the rules are right now.
Get your nostrils ready.
I got a whole week for them to figure it out.
All right.
Jeez.
That's Stephen Brunt. I'm Arash Madani. Appreciate you listening. It'll be myself and Ben Ennis next week. Have a great weekend, everyone.